And now, Understanding the Times with Jan Markell, a program committed to helping you contend for the faith and view current events through the lens of the Bible. Here's Jan Markell.
Welcome to the program, everyone. So glad you could join me. Been out of the studio last week as we conducted Understanding the Times 2011. And I'll have a little bit more to say about that, but it was wonderful meeting so many of you. We had speakers, including Mark Hitchcock, Joel Rosenberg, White House correspondent Bill Koenig, Eric Barger, Brandon House, covering current events, deception in the church, Bible prophecy, attendees from 20 states plus Canada, Australia, Puerto Rico, and attendees totaling over the 2 days, 7,000 to 8,000. Now, we will have CDs and DVDs available after November 10th. They'll be available online. We'll give my phone number just a little bit later. And we're going to be airing this hour one of our messages, and that would be White House correspondent Bill Koenig. And let me just give you a heads up. This is the only message we'll be airing here probably for the next year, that is airing over the radio, because we want you to get these CDs, DVDs, and pass them out to people who need to better understand the times and contend for the faith. Without saying anything else, additionally, let's just go back to last weekend, Bill Koenig.
I believe our next 12 months will be the most incredibly intense 12 months we have ever seen. My final news report of 2010, I mentioned, the Lord put this in my heart, that 2011 will be like no other year that we've ever experienced. And it has not let us down. And it's still only in the beginning part of October, and it continues to build. And as I tell many people, it's not two or three or four critical biblical events in play right now, our key end time final day events. It's all of them. And every one of them is in play, and every one is very complicated, moving at an accelerated, swift pace. And it's becoming incredibly challenging staying up with everything because we have everything in play. But after this conference this weekend, you'll have a very good handle of these significant things that are happening biblically and what's taking place. We have unprecedented record-setting events in America. We've had $10 billion plus events, catastrophes happening in the United States this year. It's also important for us to be prepared personally. That's what we attempt to do with our news report, is give people the information that they can use to stay informed and to personally pray about and prepare for themselves, for their families, for their loved ones. Also know what to pray about. Know what to pray about for our leaders, Congress, senators, congressmen, leaders in the United States, leaders in other parts of the world, that they will come to understand the biblical significance of these times. And also, we're blessed to have Tim LaHaye, Missler, Hawking, Reagan, Ice, Jan Markell, and others that received the report. As a matter of fact, Jan's one of the most popular of all her postings. She is right there with Mr. Lindsay. He still has a tremendous following. So Jan has these guys watching her headlights. Her articles are incredibly popular, and the interviews that we have that we post on our website are incredibly popular. Also, here's a copy of my book, Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel. We still have had great success with this book because it talks about the biblical significance of what happens to those that attempt to divide the land of Israel. We're in our 14th printing, and this is one of the best years we've ever had because this book is as relevant now as it's ever been. Now the 14 costliest hurricanes in U.S. history, 3 of the 4 largest tornado outbreaks in U.S. history, and the 2 largest terrorism events in U.S. history all happened at the time U.S. presidents were putting pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land. And the greater the pressure on Israel, and the greater the significance of that pressure, the greater the corresponding events that happen in the United States. And when you can think about it, and when you look at these events, you know, and when you watch this, when you see an American president say something about Judea and Samaria and East Jerusalem and the covenant land that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants, you can feel and see an atmospheric reaction. There's a political reaction. The God of Israel does not intend for that property to be occupied by anybody else but the Jewish people. And most of the events have happened to American presidents because we have been the one that's been pushing the peace process. However, Tony Blair, I could write a book just on Tony Blair on the things that have happened to him when he's put pressure on Israel. Angela Merkel, even though she's been very positive towards Israel, there's been consequences to Germany and France and Spain and Russia and other countries. When they become the point man for a short period of time, enormous things happen in their countries as well. It's not just the United States. And the United States happens to be, even to this day, Israel's greatest friend. And we have been blessed because of that relationship. But my message, the White House role in accelerating final day events is significant. Because every one of these presidents in this photo, as well as previous presidents, have had a role used by God to bring things to that eventual day when we will see Jesus Christ return to Jerusalem. We have to continue to warn these leaders of the consequences of dividing the land. But there are significant events that have happened during these gentlemen's time in office. I'll touch on a few of them. But these have been the guys that have promoted the peace process. And it accelerated from the time of George Herbert Walker Bush. And then obviously during the time, well, first of all, with Jimmy Carter, with the Camp David Accords. But President Bush's father was the one that really got this new round of peace talks going 20 years ago at the end of this month. And all the other presidents followed in after that in an attempt to be the president of the United States that was finally going to bring peace to Israel. It's an elusive dream. It's a dream. Isn't it amazing? As the world was focused on Israel and the Palestinians a couple weeks ago at the UN, I marveled again. Isn't it amazing how God has allowed this tiny little country the size of New Jersey to continue to be the focus of the United Nations? I was at the UN. I was talking to people from Europe, journalists from Europe and Germany and England and in the Middle East and Asia. And they were all saying that the buzz of the talk in their countries prior to the UN meeting was the Palestinians' plan to call for a Palestinian state. And it was focusing on what is this going to do to Israel. But isn't it amazing that God would allow this tiny little country, the size of Israel, and their land to be the focus, and in many people's perspective, the key to world peace? But God has designed it that way, because that is where His Son is coming back to reign. That God's time clock is the city of Jerusalem. The nation of Israel is God's time clock. And we heard leaders at the UN and for the last 12 months talk about Jerusalem. They all want to divide it. And I heard a couple other journalists up at the UN say, you know, it's really going to come down to Jerusalem. I said, no kidding. No kidding. It's just like my White House correspondent friends. I have five from the Middle East. I've got two Jewish friends from that are correspondents. And the Lord is given me an opportunity to share the gospel with them. But the way I do it, as I say, have you heard? Or you've heard about Armageddon, right? And they go, oh yes. Well, did you realize that's a battle for Jerusalem? That's the final battle of the world. It'll be for the city of Jerusalem. And that gives me the opportunity to go right into sharing the gospel about Jesus Christ beginning His thousand-year millennial reign at the end of Armageddon. So the Lord gives us opportunities like this through His scriptures, but through primarily at this point, the focus on Israel by the international community, looking at it as if it's a key to world peace. But to understand how these presidents have been influenced, I'm going to share some things with you today. Some of this you know, but I want to go into much greater detail, is who influences our presidents. Because it has a lot of responsibility. There's a lot that has to be addressed domestically and internationally. But what I have discovered in Washington over my 10.5 years there is we have some extraordinary, and I say that from a perspective of the fact that they really do understand the problems that are taking place in Israel and the Middle East. But their dots don't connect because they don't have the biblical worldview that we have.
If you join me late, you are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm airing this weekend one of our messages from Understanding the Times 2011. Want to get CDs and DVDs? Give us a call, 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. Look it up on the web at olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org, and go to products, and let's get back to Bill Koenig.
But the Council on Foreign Relations, many of you have heard about the CFR over the years, many in a conspiratorial standpoint. Well, you can go right into their website, cfr.org, and read some extraordinary writings about what's taken place in country after country in the Middle East. You can gain a better understanding of the complexities of each one of those countries. You can read about their writings about Israel. And in many cases, a lot of these folks on this list, they have a lot of people that are parts of their organization that go to replacement theology churches. So they don't have the opportunity, or they don't look at the world from a biblical worldview as we do. They look at it as a worldview removed from the scriptures. But when you look at it, Council on Foreign Relations, Brookings Institute, Saban Forum at Brookings, Hudson Institute, Middle East Institute for Peace, Carnegie Endowment for Peace, Atlantic Council, which tends to be not favorable towards Israel, a few of these others, that's true. American Enterprise Institute's favorable towards Israel. Then the Heritage Foundation, which is pro-Israel, Hoover Institute, which tends to be pro-Israel, Cato Institute's libertarians that have some great work. Woodrow Wilson International Center, the RAND Corporation, Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Aspen Institute, Center for Strategic Studies, the United States Institute for Peace, the Global Clinton's Global Initiative, and lobbyists. That's a mouthful. But these people right here, their work, their writings, everything that they do has an impact on every single one of us in this room. Everything. Whether it's domestic policies, whether it's economic policies, domestic economic, international economic. But for our focus is international focus on the land of Israel in the Middle East. There has been paper after paper after paper by these guys. But it never, ever turns out the way they write. And these are our scholars from Harvard and Yale and Columbia and other Stanford. But it just doesn't click because they don't have the Word of God. This is the handbook. This is the book that tells us how it's going to play out. I went to this event. It was November of 2008 at the museum. There were 200 world figures at this event. President Bush was giving his last address. This was, you know, right before the election. And the purpose of this Council on Foreign Relations Saban Forum effort was to introduce their brand new book called Restoring the Balance, A Middle East Strategy for the Next President. 254 pages. It had seven areas. They focused on what to do with Iran, what to do with Iraq, what to do with Syria, what to do with the Palestinians, what to do with the Israeli situation, and how these all played off each other, and how the next president, this was basically a roadmap that was given to the next president on what he should do country after country after country. CFR. What was amazing about this event, we had 200 people there that attended this. This is some of the highest profile business and political leaders, even Supreme Court justices from the United States and a couple people from Europe and Israel. And the speakers were George Bush, Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, Henry Kissinger, Chaim Saban, a very wealthy Jewish man that started Saban Forum at Brookings, who owns Univision, and congressmen and members of the Supreme Court. Now, this gives you an idea of the power centers. You've heard about all the different groups, the Trilateral, the Bilderberger, and all these other organizations, the CFR, but this gives you an idea of the center of power. And when you can draw these kind of people into a meeting in Washington, D.C., and then present a book to the next president, whether it's going to be Obama or McCain, gives you an idea of how business is conducted in Washington. What was also extremely interesting about this, there was only three media people that covered it. Two friends that were from the Middle East, one with Arab News, another friend with Al Hurra, which is the State Department's counter to Al Jazeera, and myself. They were both from Arab countries, and they never quit writing these things. They never quit trying to influence and direct the peace or the course of Middle East policy. It was all, I mean, this is 15 of the top scholars in Washington that wrote this book for the next president on what to do with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, how to bring Syria out of the access of influence from Iran, how to work with Iran to the point that they would stop their nuclear weapon development, you know, how to handle the situation in Iraq as we're moving our troops out. It was incredible. Our smartest and brightest. But we're blessed because we have the Bible. We know how it's going to play out. And we're trying to bring some info. I'll get into that in just a bit. But this is what we're going to counter in Washington. Those think tankers that run Washington and us that are trying to bring in the biblical truth to Israel and the Middle East and what's taking place. Also, another area of great influence upon our leaders in the White House is the Vatican. The Pope had a statement, Pope statements and peace events. The Pope and Arafat signed a deal in February of 2000 calling for the old city of Jerusalem to be shared between Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. You have 1 billion Catholics, you have 1.2 to 1.3 billion Muslims, maybe a little bit more, and then you have the Jews. So the Pope, a month before his trip to Jerusalem, signs a deal with Arafat, which gives him legitimacy to a certain extent, And then he gives legitimacy to Islam, and that they should, that these three great religions should split and control the old city, and no one would have sovereignty over the Temple Mount and the old city. Israel said, we have a 3,000 year history here. We are not going to give this up. Respectfully, Pope Arafat, this is our city. We have a 3,000 year history with this, a 4,000 year history with the land, and we're not going to give it up. The World Council churches, their statements over and over again are anti-Semitic. They've also been one of the key sponsors of the Seville Forum, which is a liberation theology focused on helping the Palestinians. We hear, you call it Palestinian liberation theology or whatever else. But the World Council churches, that represents 3,322 different churches around the world of all different ilks, are also calling on Israel to leave the occupied land. Oh yeah, I need to bump back up. The Pope sponsored a conference in Assisi, Italy in the end of January 2002. A week later, a major scandal relating to their priest hit the world. 1 week to the day. At the conference he put on in Assisi, Italy, he took down crosses and paraphernalia, anything to do with the Catholic Church, to make sure that all these other religions that came to this event would feel comfortable. And then a week later, this billion-dollar crisis hit the Catholic Church. And also earlier this year, the Middle East bishops said there is no right for the Jewish people to claim Judea and Samaria. That they have no right to claim. There's nothing special for the Jewish people to have a claim to Judea and Samaria today. That's a problem. The Catholics need to read the Word of God. They need to read Genesis to Revelation and understand this is very important. And then also the National Council of Churches, their letters to U.S. presidents, statements and events over and over again. The National Council of Churches says President Bush, President Obama, put more pressure on Israel to leave the occupied land, the Arab land. And see, these churches here are standing on the same side as the UN, of the EU, and the international community that's calling Israel to leave the occupied land, or saying Israel's occupying Arab land. If these churches were on the right side scripturally, the international community would not have them on the side. It would not empower them the way that they have. It's also created a lot of confusion in the White House. President Bush's first term cabinet were all from replacement theology churches. Condoleezza Rice, Presbyterian, Karen Hughes, Presbyterian, USA elder. Andrew Card's wife was a Methodist minister. There was a couple Catholics, Episcopalians. So President Bush had no evangelicals that understood the biblical significance of the land. We started writing him right off the bat, don't touch that land. Don't touch that land. And I really believe President Bush wanted to see Israel live in peace and security. But the land is not to be divided. And then church and Muslim events. Eric will go into this in great detail. And this is very, very important today. The church and Muslims coming together. It's the Protestant part of the church. This is a significant thing that continues to grow. And this is a very significant threat in the United States. At Yale, and I'm sure Eric will have more details, they had an 8-day conference between Protestants and Muslims. And one of the first things the Muslims asked at this conference at Yale was acknowledge that Allah is the same God as the God of the Jews and the Christians. I was at an event on Capitol Hill on Monday, put on by the Hudson Institute. One of the gentlemen there was an Egyptian. He said the same thing. There was a panel there of Jews and Christians at this panel. He says, I think one of the most important thing for you all is to acknowledge the fact that Allah is the same God as the God of the Bible, or God of the Jews and Christians. But these events are Yale, Georgetown. Tony Blair is real involved with Georgetown University, with Blair Faith. And they're acting, you know, Blair Faith is a desire by Tony Blair to reach out to Muslims and Christians and Jews around the world for the purpose of coming together for the sake of peace. And then pro-Arab and pro-Palestinian lobby groups, the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, the National Iranian American Council, NIAC. They are inside the White House. They are influencing members of the Obama administration and also moving into key positions on Capitol Hill. And they have moved into key positions within the Pentagon. As Frank Gaffney says, a de facto partnership between NIAC and CARE, the mouthpieces of the mullahs. This is money to keep members of Congress, to key members of Congress and exerting influence on the Obama administration.
Again, listening to White House correspondent Bill Koenig from Understanding the Times 2011 last weekend. We'll say more about ordering some of those products. Right now, let's get back to Bill Koenig.
And most of the money that built the Jimmy Carter Library, you can go in and put it in Google. Washington Times had a great article. We have it on our website. Most of the money for the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library came from the Middle East. And a bunch came from Saudi Arabia. He has been bought and paid for, unfortunately. So here you have influence. And this isn't amazing. This lobby is very powerful. And then Rashid Hussan, Obama's representative of the Organization of Islamic Conference, this is what Obama said. As an accomplished lawyer and a close and trusted member of the White House staff, Rashad has played a key role in developing the partnerships I call for in Cairo. As a hafiz of the Quran, in other words, he has memorized the Quran. He is a respected member of the American Muslim community, and I thank him for carrying forward this important work. The OIC is 56 Muslim countries. They want the 57th to be Palestine. So Obama's representative has memorized the Quran. So these three groups, the Washington think tanks, the Replacement Theology Church, and Arab lobbyists have influenced U.S. presidents, U.S. State Department, the Congress, United Nations, European Union, and the Arab League have used these writings for their benefit, the Arab League. I'll go through this quickly. The White House role in accelerating final day events is very interesting. FDR, I write about this in my book about what happened to every American president back to Woodrow Wilson and what happened to them when they were pro-Israel or not pro-Israel. FDR signed a letter with the King of Saudi Arabia saying if Israel ever wanted to become a state, that he would contact the king. He put this in writing, and a week later to the day FDR died, replaced by Harry Truman, who made sure Israel became a nation. John Kennedy put a tremendous amount of pressure on Israel to not go nuclear. There was already three nuclear powers. They thought a fourth would be bad, especially in the Middle East. He put a lot of pressure on Israel. David Ben-Gurion stepped down, replaced by Prime Minister Levi Eshkol. He backed off a little bit because he wanted that Jewish vote and Jewish support in the upcoming election. And tragically, he was assassinated in Dallas, replaced by Lyndon Johnson, who many people believe was the best friend Israel's ever had and was a big help at the time of the Six-Day War. Richard Nixon, mother, was very pro-Israel, very pro-Israel. And when Israel was attacked in 1973 in the Yom Kippur War, Golda Meir called up the White House and says, I need help. Kissinger says, let's teach those Jews a lesson. Nixon said, nope. He picked up the phone, talked to Golda Meir. She said, this is what I need, President Nixon. He says, I'll double it. And Alexander Haig is going to get it to you. Because as a child, his mother said, it's important to stand with the Jewish people. Ronald Reagan got a kick out of Ezekiel 38 and 39. I mean, he really thought it was an incredibly interesting scripture. Especially since he had such a huge role in bringing down the Iron Curtain. And helping a million Jews get out of Russia and that area out of the communist countries into Israel. And also the gospel spread through Russia. So that's how God used Ronald Reagan. He reluctantly moved forward and got involved in the peace process, but the Iran-Contra event stopped it. But Reagan really, he understood Bible prophecy, was fascinated by it. And then quickly, H.W. Bush was the beginning of the peace process, the 20-year process. That at the end of this month, that'll be its anniversary, because this was a payback to the Arabs and the international community that he would start the peace process. And then Clinton followed up with him. He accelerated his peace efforts as an atonement for the Lewinsky case. That was one of the reasons. And this Chinese espionage scandal. But especially Lewinsky, that was his desire for atonement by bringing peace to Israel. And George W. Bush reluctantly got involved in the peace process. And it was very costly to him for his 8 years. And now Obama, I'll get to this shortly, is involved very actively. Bush's decisions that accelerated final day events. He was reluctant to become involved in the peace process, was but talked into it by Mubarak and Abdullah. Mubarak of Egypt, Abdullah of Jordan. And he got involved. He attempted to appease the Saudis. So for 17 days prior to 9/11, he was working with the Saudis on what was going to be the most comprehensive address ever given to the UN. The work was finished on 9/10 and then 9/11. The God of Israel, as I've said many times here and other places, the God of Israel did not produce the evil of 9/11. But the God of Israel has been our homeland security. He's been the one in charge of our homeland security. He's the one that's made sure we're secure. We've had many terror events before 9/11 and after 9/11 that were stopped. But the God of Israel has a key role in our security. But President Bush was going to say two states living side by side in peace and security at the UN on 9/23 or 9/24. He or Colin Powell were going to give that address. And the work was finished at 9/10 and 9/11 happened. 9/11 has led to a point where our lives will never be the same because of security in our country. The price of oil at that time was in the 20s. The price of doing business worldwide has changed dramatically. Our lives are much more complicated because of 9/11. We overstimulated the U.S. economy because of 9/11. We built too many homes because of 9/11. We stimulated the economy to the point that we and China and other countries bought way too much oil. We had to the point that when we were there in January 2008, the price of oil was 118, 120, 124, got up to $145 a barrel. But when President Bush crossed that line where his dad or Clinton would never have gone, life as we know it has changed. And I don't think it'll ever change again. The war in Iraq, which was a byproduct also, $775 billion so far. 4,477 lives and 30,000 injured. 4,477 lives lost and 30,000 injured in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the war in Afghanistan has cost us $300 billion. Right now, Iraq wants us out of the country. They say you can leave 3,000 troops. But the Pentagon says we need troops to cover the 3,000. 10,000 is the best we can do. 3,000 is dangerous. It's dangerous for our troops. Iraq says, we'll leave a few behind to train our troops. Well, unfortunately, one mistake by the Bush administration, they never really built a military up in Iraq. They have militias and not a very sophisticated military. Iran is moving in quickly. I have a couple of Arab journalist friends that say, one specifically, one guy told me the other day that he'd been in Iraq recently. In the area near Basra, there is more Farsi speakers from Iran than people speaking Arabic. And also the fact the oil-rich area is where the Shiites live. That's Iranian Shiites and Iraqi Shiites. Talked to Kenneth Pollack the other day of the Saban Forum at Brookings. He just got back from Iraq. He says, we're very close to having a civil war. Very close to having a civil war in Iraq. And look what we've spent. Look at what we have spent in Iraq. And then the situation in Afghanistan is, you know, I talked to a general at the UN the other day. He's a retired general. And he says his son had been to Iraq 5 times in tours and his other son 3 times to Afghanistan. He says we need to get out of there because we're not committed to winning it. And we've been there for 10 years and it's not going. He says the other thing is, and most people don't realize that, most of the people that are coming in to the Afghan military are illiterate. They can't even write their own name. So we're teaching them to write their own name, to write, to speak. And we're spending billions of dollars to train their military. And we're not committed, and the Taliban is more aggressive there than ever. So we're see these decisions, when you make the wrong decisions, when you come up with the wrong premises, when you don't understand your enemy, like our think tanks, look what it's leaving. And what we're leaving Israel is one of the most dangerous periods of time in their history.
As we head into our bottom of the hour break, I need to make a very significant announcement as it concerns the radio outreach of Olive Tree Ministries. This radio ministry began over a decade ago, and we have some changes coming up. Understanding the Times Radio launched in April of 2001, Minneapolis-St. Paul area only. The format changed to 2 hours, as some of you will remember, back in 2003, and syndication began in 2004. And we currently air on 416 radio stations around the world electronically, but we have some changes coming up, folks. Wanted you to make note of these, that starting the 1st of November, Understanding the Times Radio will become a one-hour program, and I am hoping to offer my electronic audience perhaps a bit more commentary than that, and perhaps some additional audio will be available on my website and for those who access radio through iTunes on their iPod. And this is the popular new way of doing radio, and it does reach a younger audience, and they are very eager to understand the issues of the day, but they simply do not have the time to be near a radio. So radio programs now must come to people at their convenient time. And we can't fight the electronic revolution. Well, one little endeavor I have not even mentioned, and that is for those of you who have the Stitcher app, you can get a Stitcher app and download that to your smartphone, BlackBerry, iPad, and other mobile devices, and just go to Stitcher.com for that, Stitcher.com. But back to our kind of changing format, the radio outreach, it's not really going away, but the ministry is considering the times that we're living in. To be honest, the endurance of your host, the changing face of radio and our audience, the best use of our resources and expansion in other areas of ministry, and we're sort of pruning the two-hour bush to get more fruit out of it. And we hope you will continue to remember us both prayerfully and financially. And this is effective the 1st of November in all of our radio markets. Watch our website, e-newsletter, print newsletter for the updates on this, and I'll give you reminders on air in the coming weeks. If you want to reach me by mail, it's Box 1452, Box 1452, that's Attention Jan Markell, that's Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. And remember, all of our programming is posted to my website at Radio Archives, olivetreeviews.org, views as in viewpoint, olivetreeviews.org on Sunday. Coming back back at just a short break here. We'll continue on with Bill Koenig, White House correspondent from our conference last weekend, Understanding the Times 2011.
God is using Understanding the Times to help change lives all over the world. Rebecca writes from Portland, Oregon, "Everyone should hear the inconvenient truth Jan talks about. It enables me to discern the times." This from Peter in Washington State, "When I need a dose of reality that still offers hope, I tune in to Understanding the Times Radio." Jan Markell is committed to discerning the truth and sharing the good news. And while the gospel is free, the means to deliver it is not. Your gift to Understanding the Times is fully tax deductible and helps ensure that we're able to continue to reach people through radio and other media. You can send your gift to P.O. Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, or call 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Of course, you can always give safely and securely at olivetreeviews.org. Welcome back to Understanding the Times. Here's Jan Markell.
Welcome back to the program, part two. We're going to continue on with Bill Koenig here. Again, so good to meet so many of you last weekend at Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Understanding the Times 2011. Just a great turnout and wonderful enthusiasm. If you'd like CDs or DVDs, they will be ready after November 10th. Give us a call, 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. Look it up on the web if you'd like, olivetreeviews.org. Remember, we offer a print and an e-newsletter. You can either give us a call or check that out on the website. And also, just a quick note, we still offer CD subscription. However, the price has gone down since it would be one CD a week. And that's what the price now would be, $15 for one CD a week of Understanding the Times Radio. Now back to Bill Koenig.
And then record oil prices, enormous transfer of wealth. T. Boone Pickens from Texas, who's really pushed natural gas use in America, says we're transferring over $500 billion. We have transferred over $500 billion worth of American dollars to Middle Eastern oil countries. And this was a couple years ago, because we're probably getting close to $750 billion, maybe as high as $1 trillion of our dollars to the Middle East. And part of my pet peeve is we could have drilled it here because we have been blessed with the resources to build it. We very likely have more natural gas, or at least in the top three, behind Russia and Iran, and very likely through shale and others, oil that would be at the very top of the reserves of the world that we haven't tapped because a Democratic Congress has stopped drilling programs, pipeline construction, refinery construction. Good example, Anwar, back in the first year in George W. Bush's office, we have 19 million acres up in Anwar. In Alaska, they wanted to drill on 1,900 acres, and they said in 10 years this will supply 10% of the oil that you need in the lower 48. The Democrats stopped it. And ethanol, that's a conference in itself. So the bottom line is God has blessed us with this, and we're not using it. And we're not using it. And then Katrina's total disruption of a presidency after 9,500 Jews were forced out of their homes in Gush Katif, 24 settlements in lower Gaza, in the Gush Katif area, and then four in Samaria. And then one of the final major events for President Bush in his time of office, Condoleezza Rice pushed and pushed and pushed to get this Bush legacy, and they had this major event at Annapolis. This was very interesting. We had EU officials, we had representatives of the UN, we had 50 countries out of almost 200 countries come to Annapolis to meet the Israelis, the Palestinians, the Americans, and 50 countries, plus their representatives through the UN and the EU, to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian peace deal. I mean, is that symbolic or what? But nothing happened. They had their meetings, they signed this, signed that, but nothing happened. And then George W. Bush's trip to Israel and the Middle East. He originated the two-state living side-by-side peace and security slogan. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice went to Israel and the Middle East 26 times in her last 4 years. 2007 Annapolis conference was a world participation. And President Bush today has an 83% approval rating in Israel because Israelis really believe that he wanted to see Israel live in peace and security. And one of the key things that he did in May of 2008, he went there for Israel's 60th anniversary and told the Knesset, Israel, the 7 million people that live here, you are not alone in your war on terror. You have 300 million Americans that are standing with you, and we will, as long as it's necessary. He was blessed for that.
You are listening to a message from Understanding the Times 2011 White House correspondent Bill Koenig. And we are just off that weekend. We had somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 attendees from across the country. And we're just giving you a little bit of taste of it. We will not be airing any more of these messages probably for at least another 9 months or so. So give us a call if you're interested in CDs or DVDs. Now back to Bill Koenig.
But President Bush's decision helped lead us to Barack Obama. When you really look at it, to be quite honest, you know, we know the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and our aggressive movement into the Middle East have been a big problem for us, have caused a lot of problems. But what they have done is they've accelerated final day events. And I think that's the best way for us to look at it. It was a mistake to go in Iraq. You don't nation build in the Middle East. Another example of our think tanks suggesting you go in, and especially the ultra-conservative, go in and let's create nations. Nation building. Read the Quran. Thomas Jefferson was interesting, and Barack Obama in June 4, 2009, told the Arab world that Thomas Jefferson respected the Quran so much he had it in the White House library. Thomas Jefferson had a copy of the Quran so he could try to figure out who these Barbary pirates were. It had nothing to do with the honoring of this book. Same thing with John Adams. It's incompatible, and it's been this miscalculation. I'm going to go through a couple slides here real quick. This is my trip to Israel and the Middle East in 2008. Jan and her listeners helped sponsor this with some other friends. This was an incredible opportunity for me to go to the Middle East, to go to these key countries, and I thank those that prayed for the trip from here, and I thank those that helped support the trip, because this really is important, and I'm blessed to live in Washington, D.C., because being able to live in D.C., I can go to meetings, I can go to think tanks, I can sit in Congress, I can sit at the White House, I can go to the Middle East and talk to these people that are on the other side. It takes the edge off, because sometimes when you don't have the other story, it doesn't eliminate the edge, but the opportunity to be there and walk the land and talk to the people has helped me give a more balanced approach to reality. And it gets back to a worldview and a biblical worldview. And we have two opposing views, and most of the people in power and influence in the United States and worldwide have the worldview. That's why we have problems today. President Bush arrived in Israel January 9, 2008. Here he spoke with Lieberman, Perez, Yishai, Barak, and Olmert. Here's President Bush and the Emir of Kuwait. This was our next meeting. It was really interesting. When we were in Israel, the weather was just absolutely awesome. It just couldn't have been better. We go to Ramallah, fog. President Bush couldn't fly there in a helicopter. He ended up having to take a 34-car caravan to Ramallah. What was also interesting is President Bush asked Israel if they'd turn the lights down so he could see over the old city from his balcony at the King David Hotel. Well, sorry, we had a London fog that morning, so he couldn't see over even his balcony. So that kind of changed plans. But as soon as President Bush and we left Ramallah, the sun came back out, the skies cleared. He went to Bethlehem, he went to Yad Vashem, he went to Capernaum. We went out to Tel Aviv, got on the plane, it was beautiful. And then we come to Kuwait, and it's raining, it's snowing in Baghdad. It's horrible weather for a week, unprecedented week. And a week before that, they'd had awesome weather. So President Bush's trip to the Middle East was under a cloud. And then here, this is interesting. This is Camp Erbakan in Kuwait. This was one of our largest military bases in the Middle East. And what's interesting here on that wall behind General Petraeus is the whole Middle East and into Africa. We monitor 24/7 all terror activity throughout the Middle East into Africa, and this is all done here. They got thousands of guys sit on these screens watching it. Another cost of terror. Then here we are in Kuwait City, right behind here. Every hotel we went into, they would set up the press rooms. So all our major networks that covered this event could cover it. Every hotel. It was a really incredible process. Here's Bahrain. There's a big war right now between Shia and Sunni in Bahrain. President Bush was very warmly welcomed, and right now there's a battle between the Iranian-backed Shia and the Saudi-backed Sunnis for the future of Bahrain, which is important because our Fifth Fleet's there. There I am right in front of the presentation. This is in United Arab Emirates. This is United Arab Emirates, President Bush getting off the plane. United Arab Emirates bailed out Dubois. Dubois has had some financial problems. United Arab Emirates is so wealthy. And here he is with their meetings. Down there in that corner of that four or five-story building, that's probably the most expensive hotel in the world. It's $3 billion. It's the Emperor's Palace. And five major oil producers, they each have their own suite on top of that hotel. I talked to one of the White House photographers, and he said that there are 14-karat gold fixtures throughout the hotel. There's even a gold bullion machine. So it's like a machine that you go up to, and if you want your gold, you can get your gold bars. Only one in the world. This was the one that had the $5 million Christmas tree last year that it took a lot of heat for. And I am there. And there's President Bush just getting off the plane in Riyadh. We had snow flurries in Riyadh when he got off the flight. Unbelievable cold. There I am right in front of Air Force One. And then here's Mubarak. We stopped in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt to meet Mubarak. And Bush used to get along extremely well. And there's a lot of bad blood right now, obviously, in the Middle East because of what President Obama did in terms of forcing Mubarak out of office. So, and then here I am in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because of time. Obama's decisions are accelerating final day events like no other president. His TV interview with Al Arabiya on January 26, 2009 was heard to the world. I mean, this is within a week of taking office. He speaks to the Muslim world. Then on the Turkish parliament on April 6, 2009, he speaks to the Muslim world again. But the big speech was the one he made on June 4, 2009 to the Muslim world at a university in Egypt that has a loose affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood. And he equated the Holocaust and the plight of the Palestinians, which caused his approval rating in Israel to drop down to single digit, under 10%. He threw open the door of America to Islam, and he forced Mubarak to step down in Egypt. This was people in Israel and our allies in the Middle East were petrified because, number one, for Israel, their Egyptian border is no longer quiet. And he's perceived as a weak leader by Iran and the Muslim Brotherhood, and they will use this to their advantage for their future caliphate plans of having Islam spread from Iran all the way across to the Mediterranean. And what happens is when you have a common enemy like Israel or the United States, there is a cooperation between the Shiite Iranians and the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood. And then Iraq and Afghanistan departure accelerating events as well. The freeze in settlement construction in Judea and Samaria and East Jerusalem was a tactical mistake. From our perspective, it's a total mistake. But Elliot Abrams and other members of the George W. Bush administration said coming in that quick, that aggressively, making those demands threw everything out of order in the Palestinian peace process. Then he had a two-day conference at the White House last year when he brought Netanyahu and Abbas to the White House and also Mubarak and Abdullah talking about how we can work through this problem that we have. And after the meetings, after some little talks, nothing really happened after that until his 1967 border speech, May 19, 2011. Then on May 22nd, he came to AIPAC. I was there. That's the largest Jewish lobby group in America. There were 10,000 Jewish people there, and Obama says that he wants everything to go back to the six-day borders. Even the UN Resolution 242 does not say the full six-day borders. It says that they need to have secure borders. Within a couple hours, we had a major event hit Joplin, Missouri. Within a few hours of that, it's a tragic event to Joplin, but it happened so quick right after this happened. Obama lands in Europe for a meeting and he's on the phone constantly on dealing with the crisis in Joplin. A couple of days later, under pressure, Netanyahu does a very statesmanlike speech to Congress, And he specifically said that he's the sixth prime minister that has approved a Palestinian state. Another wave of record-setting events went through Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And this happens all the time. The greater the pressure, the greater the ferocity, and then the events always trail. It's the pressure, then the event. And that happened right there just this year. We have had $10 billion events so far this year. He and Hillary Clinton continue to pressure Israel, and Clinton says settlements are illegitimate. She emphasizes that. Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador, Obama's U.S. ambassador, who used to work for James Baker, also emphasized these settlements are illegitimate. And Claudia and I are spending a lot of time right now in the settlement community. I have some photos. We won't be able to get to it, but we are spending a lot of time right now with the mayors of the settlement communities. We're getting to know the people in Samaria. We've been in and out. We had Ariel and Shiloh and up by Shechem, which the Palestinians call Nablus. We've been all over Samaria and into the Judean desert this year because we think it's extremely important to take a stand for God's biblical rights to the land of Israel. One of my last meetings there, we had a meeting in Ariel, and I said, gentlemen, you guys really need help because there's tens of millions of dollars right now supporting the Palestinians. There's videos on the internet. There's money that are supporting the Palestinians. This is one of the most difficult times you've ever faced. And I want to stand for you. I want to make a major statement for you, but I can't do anything. I mean, for me to make a major statement, it has to be from the scriptures. And that's what we're going to stand on. The scriptures, the biblical rights to this land of Israel. And that's what we're going to tell the world. And we're going to be starting briefings very soon at the National Press Club in Washington. I'm going to use my media contacts. We're going to bring people in to speak about Israel's biblical rights to the land. We're going to bring scholars and people like that that are articulate, that can explain to the media the other side of this issue. Because the media uses biblical terms to explain these times. So we're going to tell them what Armageddon is. We're going to tell them about the Gog-Magog War. And I like Jan's idea. If you call it a prophecy event, a prophecy conference, you won't have the attendance. But if you say understanding the times, you're going to have a bigger attendance. This is a prime example. So we want them to understand the times from another perspective, the Word of God. Because we're all about ready to meet them. And they need to become familiar with Him and familiar with His Son, Jesus Christ. That includes our Jewish friends that live in the settlements of Israel. We've had more opportunity to share the gospel in the last 2 years than we've ever had. We've spent hours in the Jewish quarter and around Israel and up in the settlements sharing with our friends about Jesus because most of them have never heard about Jesus. There's a confusion when you think about the Israelis. Look what they have seen come in that country in the name of Christianity. They're confused. Or if you go in Yad Vashem, one of the first exhibits in Yad Vashem talks about the Christians' role in the Holocaust. That's the Protestant part of the church, or the Catholics' role. But there's this misconception in Israel. Oh, what a Christian is. So we're trying to help them better understand that. But one of the best ways to do it, as I said, is using God's scriptures. Using the scriptures to explain people of the biblical significance of the times we're living in. My Jewish friends that work at the White House and 75% of the people, 75% of the journalists that went to Israel with us were Jewish. And I had an opportunity to share what the Bible says about these times. What is happening? That's our only covering, guys, and friends. That's our covering. It's the scriptures. And when we can point to the scriptures, that's where God will give us the tools and give us the power that we need to show them the love that we have, not only for the Jewish people, but also for the Arabs. They're open too. Major things are happening across the Middle East right now. It's an exciting time to be living and seeing God move through Israel and throughout the Middle East. Couple quick things here. I know my time is pretty much out. So one thing that's been very problematic over the last couple of months, they're wiping Israel off photos in the White House website. This was a photo last year of Biden there with Perez in Jerusalem, Israel. A couple months ago, they took Israel off. They're cleansing the photos. They're cleansing the documents at the State Department. They're getting rid of this right now. There's a young man suing right now. His case is going to the Supreme Court, stating the fact that he wants Israel on his birth certificate. It's got to the Supreme Court and the State Department through Hillary Clinton. They're saying, no, it's not. This is still up for a debate. And here's from a friend of ours that works at the Department of Commerce. This is from their chief counsel for international commerce. And I deleted the names of the key people, the top people. This was September 8th, and it said the State Department and the NSS have expressed concern with how some USG, including Department of Commerce documents available on the web, have referred to Jerusalem. Specifically, such documents have referred to Jerusalem as being located within Israel. U.S. policy to promote a final and permanent resolution of the state of status of Jerusalem through negotiations by the parties to the Arab-Israeli conflict and support by the international community. In the light of this policy, the United States does not treat Jerusalem as a city located within Israel. And reference to Jerusalem and Department of Commerce, internet postings, and other documents should not treat Jerusalem as such. For example, references may be made to Jerusalem, but not to Jerusalem, Israel. This is our State Department. Told the Department of Commerce to do this and to write their staff. Please keep this in mind when drafting documents that will be made public. So in other words, the Obama administration has told their people that Jerusalem is Jerusalem. It's not Israel any longer. When you talk about the acceleration of final day events, this president has done more to accelerate final day events in Israel, in the Middle East, with his lack of moral agenda here in America, with LGBT, with his position on abortion. We need to keep praying for our leaders. But this president has gone beyond the line. There's Christians. There are a couple pastors. Joel Hunter, he's a Protestant pastor from Orlando. It's a very large church. T.D. Jakes and others share the gospel or minister with Obama. They trade emails. But all of our leaders are responsible, our Christian leaders are responsible for telling our presidents and vice presidents the biblical significance of their decisions. And they need to be doing that, and they're not doing that. The LGBT agenda is expanding rapidly. The pressure by the White House on Israel and the Middle East is expanding rapidly. And other decisions that are taking place right now in Washington are accelerating final day events. So it's not a surprise. But I wanted you all informed of what's taking place and how everything has come to this point. And we need to continue to pray for our presidents, our vice presidents, our leaders, how challenging that might be at times. But we need to, because if you go against the God of Israel, whether it has to do with the covenant land of Israel or anything else the Bible gives us, there will be consequences. Big consequences.
And just a quick reminder as we exit hour one that Understanding the Times Radio, starting 1st of November, is dropping down to 1 hour. And again, I'm hoping to offer my electronic audience a bit more commentary than that, perhaps some additional audio available on my website. And for those who access radio through iTunes and other electronic opportunities, and this is the new way of doing radio, and it does reach, as I said, it reaches a younger audience. And they are eager to understand the issues of the day. They simply do not have time to be near a radio, so radio ministries must go to them. And so starting the 1st of November, we will be airing hour one only of Understanding the Times Radio, and continue to remember us prayerfully and financially, as that will continue on some 416 radio outlets. Again, CDs, DVDs of our conference last weekend featuring Mark Hitchcock, Joel Rosenberg, White House correspondent Bill Koenig, who you have heard this hour, Eric Barger, Brannon House. Just give us a call, 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444, available after November 10th, or check it out online, olivetreeviews.org. That wraps it up for hour one. Eric Barger up next. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
If Jan Markell's radio outreach has helped you understand the times, would you consider a tax-deductible donation to Olive Tree Ministries? You could write to Box 1452, that's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311, or call 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. You can also order and donate securely at olivetreeviews.org. And thanks for listening to Understanding the Times.